Welcome to Modcast, a Civilization podcast focused on game modding. Rob R8XFT.
T Pangolin.
Jan Boruta.
Alpha Shard.
People have just been whispering in your ear, so hey, T-Pang, have you done the Inuit yet? We're really, really pleased that we can release the Inuit within the next couple of days. Hopefully I'm not jinxing myself by saying this.
Hello and welcome to with me, Rob R8XFT. Also here is
Alpha Shard, Scott.
T-Pangolin.
Hiram. Jan Boruta.
Modders use a lot of dummy building. I remember using some sort of civ selection bonus thing where you mouse over it and it just told you all the dummy buildings, which is what, as modders, we try to try to hide, because a lot of the times when we try to mod things, it's just not easily achievable without like a hidden building that provides those benefits when it's not actually a building that you can build in game. So yeah. I think there was one of them where you just like, it just showed you all the buildings and it was just, oh, I was supposed to hide that. Just it's like forceful undressing. I don't like
it. Yeah, but I've seen less and less mods, at least that I use, make use of all those dummy buildings. I think only Prussia and Belgium. Can't recall any other Civ mods that use those dummy buildings in abundance, because all is now handled.
Last Sword uses a lot of dummy buildings, and I know Colonia's Legacy, like Australia, has like 15 of them. dummy buildings are a good way to achieve something that the player doesn't usually see, and he's like, oh wow, that's part of the tray. Like, for example, Canada. Is if you want to be friends with Canada, you get the extra delicate because you're friends with them. That's actually just a building. That's not some sort of trait that appears out of thin air. That's just a building that appears in your capital city if you are friends with Canada. So there's a lot of weird, not taboo, but essentially there's a lot of weird territories where modders are now going. Some mods out there that add brothels that increase happiness, and I know that more luxuries, Barathor, he's planning on including marijuana or hemp. And there's a lot of people going, is that really necessary? And other people are like, yeah, that's historically relevant, so why not?
Yeah,
but, I mean, so is slavery, and that's not exactly included in kind of an outcry like, please leave my civ slavery free.
Yeah.
Well, there were mods introducing slavery, albeit in a simple way.
They had slavery in Civ 4.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, they did.
And I wonder how many people complained about that.
I think, again, alluding to forums and also on Steam, I think the problem sometimes with mods that we have is that you're trying to introduce a mechanic that is quite relevant, and then somebody are trying to derail the discussion into some sort of historic events and debate and have a big debacle on it, when actually it's just purely...
There's a group of people on Tumblr that hate Civilization because of the concept of cultural appropriation.
Oh, my goodness.
So it's one of those head desk scenarios that you can never win. Yeah, as soon as you make something, you're going to make people angry. Like, what, with Beyond Earth, people are really getting up in arms at the fact that there's no Caucasian white males revealed yet.
Oh, for fuck's sake.
But then if they did reveal Caucasian white males, people would just be like, well, where's our mixed males? And you're just like, oh, you're always going to anger somebody.
Yeah.
There's always going to be something that you like or something else to hate.
The internet.
The internet. Internet fun machine.
Yeah. So first up today, then, we're going to be discussing Hiram Civilization. First of all, I've got a question for you. I understand that you're looking at redoing some of the Celtic civilizations.
Yes, yes. Thinking what I want to do, I want to give it a bit of an art overhaul in some places. I mean, I have redone a few of the icons. So I'll be changing the lead of Ireland to a contemporary of Brian Boru, another High King that he displaced. And then when he died, took over the High Kingship of Ireland afterwards as well. His name was Mael Sechnial II. I don't know how to pronounce that. I think that might be right. Yeah. But he was significant in that he drove the Norse out of Dublin. And I'll be able to use the same leader art for him probably too. Should be interesting.
I think you should do Maeve of Connaught, another ancient leader from about the 1st century AD or BC. What she used to do, if anybody was heroic in battle, she'd sleep with them. As an incentive. How could you build that into a unique ability? I don't know.
Lots of happiness for military units.
Or maybe if she got older, maybe not so much happiness. I don't know.
I don't know. Civ leaders are pretty immortal.
I'm not going to be too heroic. It was him that did that, you know. I had nothing to do with that battle. It was all him. I can certainly imagine some of the modders around doing something creative along that, or being able to do something along those lines.
The main thing I want to do, I want to add a couple of new civilizations. First one would be Brittany, and the second one would be the Isle of Man, also known as the Manx people. I mean, those two are requested quite a bit on the Steam Workshop comments.
The title of your whole project, overarching project, is The Forgotten Other Civilizations. What sort of civs do you undertake, just to give people just a broader overview of what it is you actually do?
I guess my original intention was to do ones, civilizations that people haven't really had a look in at. So I sort of started out with some obscure things, like I did the Khanate of Cyber and the Uyghur Khaganate, which they're the sort of civilizations that don't really come to mind when you're thinking about ones that would usually be in the game. And I kind of find those interesting because it's something you wouldn't normally think about. So you sort of learn a bit as you play with them. The whole curiosity thing, I guess.
Yeah, it's definitely an interesting one. I mean, anecdotally, especially for me, the only reason that I was so into history and mythology is because I played games that facilitated that, and I wouldn't know half as much about history if I didn't play video games. So it's an interesting take on the whole sort of reason to mod and reason to show people that these cultures actually existed and they don't deserve to be ignored just because certain people wrote the history books.
Yeah, and I guess a lot of my inspiration comes from back when my Civ 4 days, because I used to play a mod in Civ 4 called Civ Gold, and that added about 90 new civilizations to the game. And a lot of those were obscure ones, like the Uyghur. Also, I believe they added Latvia as well, and Lithuania, which my current Lithuania mod is kind of based on. I guess I got a lot of my knowledge of some of the more obscure civilizations from playing that mod and reading through the Civilopedia and learning about all these different cultures. And I always find myself referring back to it for ideas when I want to think about new projects I want to do, which is good.
Yeah. I think as well, if you're doing unusual civilizations, no one can come along and say, that doesn't sound like the Khanate of Sabir to me. How dare you have that unique unit or that unique ability? It probably gives you a little bit more room for maneuver when you actually decide.
A little bit. If I get stuck in a corner, I can always sort of have a bit of creative license, which is good. I did get one guy on Steam Workshop at one point. It was about my Mitanni Civ, which is based on Rob's original Civ in Anno Domini.
Blame it on me, then.
Yeah? No. It's this guy on Steam Workshop who decided that the Mitanni didn't even exist and I shouldn't make a Civ of them because they didn't have any written records.
Bizarre.
Ooh, I'm getting that with the First Nations at the moment, that they shouldn't be Civs because they didn't have a written language or they didn't have permanent settlements. I'm like, okay, well, fine. I won't make these mods that people enjoy then. Jeez. What's your favorite civilization that you covered in your project so far?
I think I've got a couple of ones that I quite like. Quite happy with how the Kulin Nation turned out. I think it's mostly because it's quite close to home, but I guess like the way it all links together in terms of components, especially their unique ability, which gives each city a free great work of art slot. And also that mixes in with their unique building, which is a replacement for the artist guild, which you can do it 5 times so that you get a lot more great artist generation happening. So you can get a lot of culture from that, which is quite good. And it sort of distinguishes it from the other civilizations quite a bit as well, which don't really have that facility with making a lot of great artworks in the early game.
Yeah, definitely.
One of the civs that I was looking at that you did was Cornwall in the Celtic civilization.
Ah, yes.
Yeah, well, you'd use some of my art for that, actually.
I think it was like the leader of the Norse.
Yeah, possibly that one needs replacing, that art, to be honest with you, because it doesn't look very Celtic. He's more of a Norse person. If you are doing a revamp, possibly we need to get a new leader in there or a different bit of art in there.
For sure,
but
yeah.
One thing that I would do with the Cornish, they were more of a trading nation. It's like people came from all over the world to get their tin. So maybe you could put a slant on that if you did do an update of Cornwall. Something like they could have a building which generates a unit of tin, which is a unique luxury, something like that.
Yeah.
The tin was pure. People like Alexander the Great used Cornish tin, allegedly, because the tin in his local area was very difficult to smelt.
Yeah, you had the Phoenicians coming up there as well.
Yeah, absolutely.
But that could be a good idea, something to maybe integrate into like changing the unique ability, I think. Because like you want it to be available fairly early in the game. So I wouldn't attach it to, say, the existing unique building, the Stannery, because that comes at the same time as the factory. That's a little bit too late.
Possibly so. But,
yeah.
My favourite of your civs so far is definitely the Seleucids.
Actually, I'm mostly because it's Vian's art.
Yeah, Zard is amazing.
Yes, the art's fantastic for those.
The colors are really nice, and I find that the courthouse replacement and just the whole unique ability of the Civ is very, because I don't like warmongering Civs. I'm not a warmongering player, but it's really fun to play as the Seleucids because of all the components and how just well they gel together. Same thing with the guys who built Petra.
Nabatean, I think.
Nabatean.
I'm not sure.
Nabatean.
Yeah, Nabatean. That's what I want to do with some of my Civs. Try and get some better art in some of the older ones, particularly kind of the Cyber.
My favorite thing that I love the most and I hated the most about the Cyber leader screen is when you go Sid, is the peace theme was just, oh, for about 15 minutes. And it was really just unnerving trying to trade with
them. That's the charm of it, I think.
Yeah. I think it was just so loud and overpowering that it's just like, what is happening? I do like it, all those Karganite Civs. It really does fill out the world on those True Start location maps. Because, you know, Russia is so empty on True Start location. So if you're looking for Civs to fill out Russia, definitely go for higher rams Karganite Civs.
Exactly, yeah.
And that sort of brings me, I guess, to something I'm doing in the future, the Yakut Civ.
Just about to ask you about that.
Yeah, I mean, I've got almost all of the art now. And I've just been sort of consolidating my ideas about the unique components. And I can sort of talk about a few things that are going on with that. So the unique ability, as it's sort of in my mind now, is going to be a bonus from pastures and camps. Present, I think I'm going to do it as an additional +1 food, +2 gold. It's quite simple, but it encourages the player to sort of go out and seek out these resources in order to bring that extra income, that extra growth. But sort of synchronizing in with that, one of their unique units is the Toyon, which replaces the Great General. And what I plan for them to be able to do, because you know how the great generals, they have the ability to build a citadel and do a bit of a culture bomb with that. Well, with the Toyon, I'm going to do something a little bit different. They can still do the citadel, but they can also, if there's an unclaimed, say, resource that can be improved with a pasture or a camp, what I want them to be able to do is improve that resource and build a special Toyon's camp or Toyon's pasture. And it does large culture bomb, which sort of helps you claim lots of territory.
Would it remove that particular resource from the map?
It wouldn't remove it from the map. It'd still be workable. I was sort of thinking about what kind of yields I give the Toyon's camp as well. Like, I wanted to make it a bit special, other than just, like, expanding territories, of course. It sort of fits in with the fact that the Yakuts have little sort of colonies and stuff all scattered around the place in the far east of Russia, where certain resources were. So I sort of wanted to emulate that a bit. Then again, it synchronizes in with the unique ability as well. So focusing on the pastoral and hunting things that the Yakut people did.
Yeah, and we need more Civs that are good at going wide, because going wide is discouraged currently.
Yeah, and we definitely need to fill in that part of Russia too, because there's nothing there at the moment in terms of Civs you can put on the TSL map.
I like the idea of the Great General claiming more territory. I don't think there is something that does that at the moment, so that might be quite unique.
The inspiration I took from that, was something I've seen recently. I think it was when I was playing with Belden, actually, and the way JFT made pastures. Building plantations outside of your territory.
Yeah.
Really, really fun on a True Start location map.
What plans have you got for Brittany and the Isle of Man?
They're very much in the early design phase, unfortunately. I haven't really got any sort of solid ideas for them yet. Been kind of busy with university and so on, so I haven't had that much time to think about them yet. But I'm going to be pulling in with, like, the community and so on, seeing what they think, and then sort of evaluating what I can actually do in terms of coding and so on, and who I need to get help from. It's all kind of up in the air. I still need to work on it.
What did spark your interest in the few European nations that you have? So, for example, Lithuania and Bosnia in particular.
I think it was originally COF, who does a bit of art for me in some of my Civs. He was interested in having a Bosnia Civ. So he provided me with a lot of the original art, and then I sort of just put it together, and it turned out quite well. Particularly happy with how the new versions turned out too, because I eventually took it down for a bit and then decided to re-release it. I think this is when JFT started bringing the concept of alternate leaders. It made me think, maybe I can make my own Bosnia again and have it a little bit different from Davey Henninger's one. And make them compatible so you can have them both alongside each other. Like, I've seen JFD do with a lot of Civs. And I guess I've done the same thing with Lithuania too.
Mm-hmm. There's no defined really sort of territory where modders can and can't go. I mean, sometimes we respect each other's boundaries and sometimes we just don't. So it's really good to make them compatible.
Coming back to Bosnia, I like how it's centered about the missionaries and religion, just about this Bogomilist heresy. It's really cool to see it represented in the game. I like the design of the Civ.
Yeah, it all fits quite well together, I think, because you've got the unique building, the Bogomilian Church, which generates a missionary each time you build it. But you've also got the unique ability. I can't pronounce the actual Bosnian words for it, but you put a missionary in one of your cities, garrison it in there, and it basically acts like an extra barracks and gives your military units extra experience, which is quite handy, I find, especially if you want to go wide in a military sense.
Yeah, the more churches you get, you will get more missionaries and spread the religion even further. So it's really nice how everything works together here.
Yeah, it's something I've been lot to do with my civs lately, is trying to make it so everything fits in together nicely and it all works together. I find always enhances the gameplay quite a bit when everything actually makes sense in relation to the other components.
Yeah, as a player, it's really fun. The more civs, Mughal Empire is really, really centered around building. But a lot of the times I hear a lot of the complaints about modded civs is that sometimes they're too synergistic. Because a lot of the Brave New World civs are very sort of oriented towards one sort of play style, but then you have other base civs which aren't exactly oriented. They're very sort of all over the place. So a lot of the times if you have to kind of reach a compromise. Is this too synergistic? Does everything work too well together? Does everything work too well together towards this particular thing? Or do I want to give them a bit of leeway so they don't have to go in this particular direction?
Yeah, I do try and make it so it doesn't force the player to go in a certain way. The ability's there and you sort of work out whether you want to exploit it or not.
JFD's Belgium.
You've had a right old time with Belgium, haven't you?
I think we all have. Anyone who's played the Civ is really just like, it's so flavorful. The music is really nice and Jan's art is top jazz always. Aesthetically, thematically, it works just really well. And having the unique unit, which is essentially a Gatling gun replacement, it gets like more benefits if you're diplomatic towards other Civs. So it's really, really just well done.
It seems like kind of a world war starter if you declare friendship with a whole bunch of civs, and then you pick one civ to start making angry in various ways until the point that they declare war on you, and then you get like a whole bunch of civs declaring war on them at the same time. It just seems like an interesting way to get a whole bunch of civs to gang up on another civ.
Yeah, definitely. It's a civ that plays really, really well if you have an AI friendliness and an ally chart next to you.
I've got one question about it that I haven't come across yet. The ability where military units given by other civs that you've got a declaration of friendship with when war's declared on you, that's really useful. But I don't know how it works if you are playing a civ against Belgium, whether or not you have to donate a unit or a unit's just automatically produced for them.
No, I think they are just created upon declaration of war. So Belgium gets units in any case and you don't lose.
Right.
Yeah, I was actually playing with them a few days ago. I started a bit of a game before I went and made my Lithuania. And I believe I got a declaration of war from the Picts. They decided to declare war on me and I got a couple of spearmen. It was quite nice. And I was able to bolter up one of my coastal cities to stop them from taking that, which is really good. I mean, it's a very good ability, I find. Especially in that early game when a lot of civs, if you're playing on a high difficulty level, like to gang up on you if you decide to do a bit too good.
It's also good in early game where a lot of civs actually declare friendship with you before they know that you're inherently terrible. Yeah. It's like, hey, do you want to be my friend? And like, yeah, I want to be your friend, definitely. And then you realize that you're conquering other nations and they like kind of back out of that situation. So it's good in the early game, good in the late game. It's a good game. It's a good game when you're playing with Belgium.
And it's all about chocolate.
It is.
Oh, definitely. Yeah. The whole aesthetics are just centered around chocolate.
The chocolatery, and I've used that to trade for other resources as well. I built one or two. Thought that was quite nice. Yeah,
it's a fine limitation because it replaces a zoo, so you only get one boost of happiness once you get the praline resource first. So you have to trade with everyone else the next resources to get the happiness that you would get from the zoos normally.
Yes,
it plays into the whole friendship thing even better.
Yeah.
Yeah.
The only thing that isn't really synergistic about the Civ is the plantations, which is a really sort of subtle nod to the whole, let's go to Africa and have a bit of an adventure with people without hands sort of scenario. But it's really, really fun thematically in game. It just doesn't really tie into the rest of the Civ, really. Yeah.
It's just a hint at colonization. So
it's just a small hint.
It sounds like it's useful for things that are just outside your culture border.
Yeah, I found it's more useful for that. Anybody else have any problems with, as soon as you declare war with somebody, then all of a sudden those resources that were giving you some happiness, all of a sudden they've been overrun by the enemy, and so
oh, definitely. But it's really good just to have it as a sentry post in the middle of Asia.
Where it can be useful, certainly in the way I play, which isn't very good, is where you can't really build another city because it's going to take your happiness too way low. But there's a resource that's just out of reach, possibly being the borders of the new city. So getting the resource first, getting the happiness back to where it should be, and then building the new city is a good thing with it.
I think there's no better feeling than just getting a plantation right next to an enemy city. It's all the way over the other side of the world. They've just settled this new place, and you just build resources all around the perimeter of the newly founded city. It's great. But it's great.
I had a fun game with Belgium in which I was isolated on an island where I could stick three cities on, and I met literally nobody until late Renaissance. Nobody bothered to research astronomy, and so I just went exploring first. Discovered some plantation resources just out of reach, not of me, but of my opponents, on small, tiny, one-tile islands around the continent. So I just snooped in with workers, grabbed them, and had also line of sight around my opponents. It was a really nice and rewarding way of stealing land from them, essentially.
They couldn't. It'd be fun to play against them with Luigi's new cube. They get increased combat strength on plantations.
Yeah.
So what about the Victoria Civ then?
Oh, I like that one. Wish I had that Sun Never Sets ability instead of what they usually give.
Yeah, it is much better. Do you think it is something that's slightly overpowered?
Yeah, possibly, yes. Wonder how it scales if you're like on a very huge map and go like to the other side of the world and get like, I don't know how much gold exactly you get, but it could be a large number that's ridiculous.
Yeah, those scale pretty well, but you settle very far away from your homeland very late in the game, and the buildings are getting more expensive, and you have to buy all those buildings, like monuments and shrines in every city, so it kind of balances out.
I wouldn't say that it balances it out completely, because it's a really good snowball effect. If you gain gold from settling new cities, you get more gold, which you can use to get more cities, and if you go Liberty, you're just spamming cities absolutely everywhere and using gold to facilitate that.
There's a finite amount of resources, so you can't have infinite happiness to run the city.
Yeah, it does require a certain amount of effort.
If you get patronage and get palace, it's going to be insane. Like, I've played it with the Forbidden Palace, and you just go from negative 10 to, you know, plus 30 happiness with that Forbidden Palace when you just have so many cities.
Yeah, but it's hard to get that one, though. Everyone builds it.
Yeah, I'm never able to get that one. Someone else always gets it for me.
But I also like the red coat. Its abilities are like Victoria's middle finger for everyone else. Because the red the red coat ignores terrain cost and may enter rival territory without open borders. So you can just move around everywhere, piss off everyone, and then kill them.
Yes, and if you have negative happiness, they can garrison them in cities where the production is essentially impacted. And you don't get those penalties anymore. So, yeah, they're really good as sort of colonial masters, overlords, which is really good. That's essentially the theme that Victoria's trying to convey, that just set up colonies everywhere and make everybody your little underlings.
Yeah, so with the red coat and the ship of the lion, Victoria is really good at industrial age, late game colonization instead of earlier, because you will get more cash for settling further and you have units to support expansion.
See, Victoria, though, a lot of people could say it's very overpowered because there's lots and lots of different little finite niche abilities that are really, really cool and really sort of tie into the whole colonial overlord thing. And it's great. There's also a fine line between how conducive if you want to make your civs to Firaxis, if you want to make them more powerful because it's more representative. It's a really, really interesting one because as a designer, you want to make something people actually want to play and want something that's really good and representative-wise, but you don't really want to break the game balance. And Victoria kind of rides that line between, is this too powerful? Because we know that it's really good at representing what it does.
I think it's on the line. I think it's okay.
It gets close, but it's such a fun Civ to play with, though. Yeah. Sort of, when I do, I don't really care.
Yeah, no, all in all, it's just, as a motto, you're marketing this Civ. Do people want to play this, or do they want to play something where the attributes are more boring, but representative of the Civ really well, like the Civ 5 America, if you can put everything into a nutshell of the, you know, Manifest Destiny and claiming new tiles, and it's good representative of Louisiana Purchase, but it's not a fun Civ to play, so you want to go from that one side of the spectrum to another side of the spectrum, like Victoria, and you really just want to play with it.
Yeah, I can agree with that. Fun, rewarding, what's not to love?
Yeah, so it's a great Civ. What would be fun, I think, is in a negative sort of way, is if those colonies that are further away actually could revolt and become a city-state. I know that that's not something I said in the program, but imagine that.
good like mechanic is... just in general for the game, I reckon.
Yeah.
Oh, definitely. Definitely. It'd be really cool if Victoria had found Sydney or Wellington, New York or whatever like that.
From a modding point of view, it's a sort of ability as well that could be stolen and used for another save, like the ancient world, like my Anno Domini mod. So when I'm looking at some of the saves, I'm looking at what I can actually steal. And that's a really good ability that could perhaps be used for something else as well.
In Civ 4, I recall there was something like that you could release a Civ when you had colonies on another continent. And just
that was some in the Beyond the Sword expansion.
Yeah, yeah. And I recall many people disliking it, but now we're talking about faraway colonies in Civ 5 becoming city states, and it's like the same thing.
Yeah.
Challenge for the player, maintain those cities to the point where they don't want to revolt against you.
That
adds another challenging new dimension to the game, which would be quite interesting. Did we want to talk about Champa at all?
Yeah, I played as Champa.
Me too.
I played a little bit with it.
So how do we pronounce his name? That's what I've been trying to figure out. Because there's so many weird inflections that I haven't seen before.
I just like to say Chebong Na or something like that. I don't know.
Oh,
yeah.
Let's call him
Che. It's an interesting Civ, though. I wasn't able to really take advantage of the unique abilities so much when I was playing it because I was kind of on my own in the middle of Southeast Asia. And there weren't many Civs around me, really. Like, the closest one was in India. So I had nobody basically sending their boats through my territory to trade with anyone else. So I wasn't really stealing anything, which is a shame.
You clearly need colonial legacies as Vietnam. They'd be close.
Yeah, I was playing random maps with Champa, and I couldn't complain about lack of Civs around me. In one game, I was forward settled by Hitler, and he took the best spot on my own island, even though he had his whole island completely empty. I declared war in classical era, took him out with triremes, and every turn I got a small trickle of his gold per turn for my own purposes. But yeah, this was one game which was an utter failure on my part, but the second game I had, I was being forward settled A, by Norway, and B, by France. So I got to wars with both of them pretty early on, and it helped my economy and helped to fund all my spearmen and archers to take them out, because I was clearly in the negative, losing like 10 gold per turn. But just by being at war with both of these nations at once filled up my coffers every turn with I think additional 5 or 10 gold above the loss.
Yeah, gotta love a little trickle.
It's great.
Civs with those trick systems are really cool. I think Paraguay does that. You get culture from other people's tourism. Armenia does that with our faith. That's really fun as well.
And Switzerland with gold.
Oh, that's right too. Of course, of course.
Yeah, it's a nice unique ability to actually get gold for just declaring war with people, especially at a time when you need a bit more gold.
Definitely.
It goes well with tithe as well.
I usually think church property, because it gets fixed amount.
Yeah, 2 gold per city.
I think I would like buried amount rather than the actual fixed amount per city. But yeah, back on the Champa, should we go on about the unique improvement? Because that unique improvement is really, really cool. It's really, really, really well done. Let's steal from trade routes again.
The unique improvement is a square well available at Optics. Gives plus to food. I found it that it's great on desert tiles, coastal desert tiles. It's absolutely fantastic. Plus 1 gold after navigation. Okay. Generates golden age points whenever a cargo ship not owned by Champa travels within 2 tiles of the improvement. And the most important part, I think, maybe build outside friendly territory. So you can go around the coasts, build them everywhere, and just reap all the golden age points for you.
Yeah, it's really good, especially on tiny little straits where people have to go around. And you just have to be wary of where people are going to send their trade routes. So I wish there was like a UI enhancement that you can actually see other people's trade routes, not just your own trade routes on the map. That would be really handy, especially with the Champa. But it's a very, very fun and very, very fun improvement. And it looks really, really nice as well in the game.
Yeah.
Doesn't lie, it does a square well. Thing is, if you mouse over the other people's trade routes, then you can see their trade routes and where exactly they're going to and from. So it'd be really good just to have it a permanent sort of trade route to and from where things actually go.
Yeah, you can also hover over your cities, but only over your cities to check others' trade route.
But no, Champa, overall, it's a beautiful, beautiful city. The color scheme is very, very, very pretty. Very pretty.
What's the art yours, Jan?
I think it was the leader scene only here.
Did the leader scene and the icon at
Secret Act, I think.
No, he did the map. Tomatek himself did the actual icon.
Hmm.
Well, Luigi was responsible for the improvement. And
yes, but I think the actual Ballista Elephant icon was by Last Sword. The Ballista Elephant itself is really cool. It's support from Civ 4. The arrows, I didn't notice until I turned off quick turns, come out of the elephant's forehead, which is kind of cool. but it's really cool just seeing these elephants with giant crossbows wandering around the maps. Fantastic, because they're all pink and purple. Pretty pretty overall.
Yeah, I think the animations are from the Roman ballista there.
Yes,
so that's right. Why the arrows come from the foreheads. And the ballista elephant is just like a ballista. It's a siege weapon. A bit weaker, but it works.
Yeah, it's good because it doesn't actually need to set up to attack. It has a smaller bonus. Overall, it's only like, what, 100% instead of 200%? But it's also good 50% defense against mounted units.
Yeah, I mean, what a team, really, with the Champa. When you look, Tomatek, Jan Baruta, Luigi, Secretax, top stuff there. Can ask for much better than that.
No, you cannot. It's really good when all the top people in that Civ modding game all work together. What's the motivation behind more Civs splitting up Polynesia?
I think the motivation behind it, it's like the motivation behind India, that it is an amalgam of different things about Polynesia, just like India was an amalgam of things about India, and Greece is an abstract of ancient Greece. And the intention is to break it up and bring, I think, more history into the whole Polynesian Civ. Because in Vanilla, we have a Hawaii leader, Maori unique unit, and Easter Island unique improvement. So from the three extreme corners of the Polynesian triangle, Polynesia is broken up into four different Civs. So we have Hawaii, we have the Maori, we have the Tongan Empire, and the Easter Island. Still, those are those extreme corners and borderlands of the Polynesians, but they are given much more love and much more focused design. Of course, they were redesigned over and over again, but I think it's nearing its final form right now.
I think what a lot of people will be wanting to know is how is early embarking handled? Any civs that take on that ability?
Actually, we had a pretty heated discussion about this ability because it's cool and it defines Polynesia just as the players imagine it right now. But after those discussions, we settled for something that is historical and only one civ will get it early on. It will be the Tonga. Well, who are those explorers? So they will get the Outrigger unique unit that is a replacement for a trireme, goes over oceans immediately. And it confers this ability to embark units that are on the same tiles. You get early sailing, you get early settlers and outriggers, and you do exactly the same as Polynesia, just with a little bit more effort. Other civs in the pack, I think, won't get it, because at this argument that it's all about history, that the Maori didn't really leave New Zealand, except for those small islands that they wanted to conquer around it. The Easter Island people didn't get it anywhere, really, when they became the Easter Island people. And the people from Hawaii, well, they also didn't explore. They were, well, sedentary and only waged war between themselves. So you'll see a new face exploring all the world. So you'll stop hating Kamehameha for that. And you'll start hating another person.
Yeah. Sounds like the opposite to like an Indonesia, because Indonesia, it's really only fun if you're playing on an archipelago or a true star location map, because it can work on Pangaea and continents, but it's just not as fun. But it sounds like that was it Rapa Nui and probably Maori and perhaps Hawaii. They're going to be pretty stuck until astronomy.
It depends on the kind of map you're playing, though. The Earth map that I've got, I believe I've got everything connected up with sea tiles all the way up to Rapa Nui, just for the gameplay aspect of things. Yeah.
Yeah, it's a lot of islands to settle, so a Hawaii player will have something to do.
Maybe the unique ability for one of the Polynesians should be able to use Krakatoa instead of it just being isolated in the ocean and not being able to work it.
Right, yeah. Krakatoa, yeah, knows the pain.
Yeah, just snatch it from Indonesia. Yeah, right in the ball. Right now, Vanilla Polynesia is great on water maps, everything about that. But all the other Polynesian ships of the Maori, Hawaii, and Rapa Nui will get a chance to do well, for example, on Pangaea. Without being hindered by lack of water, because they are not dependent on water, really. Tonga is dependent on water with its unique unit and unique building. But it also gets a bonus to meeting city-states, so every civ will have something for every situation.
Out of the Polynesia split, which civ do you like the best? Is there anything that you're looking most forward to seeing in-game and meeting? Personally, I'm looking forward to Maori because of the unique improvement, and the leader screen is really nice, and perhaps because it's closer to home and we've got relatives in New Zealand, but I'm really looking forward to the Maori.
Well, I think I'm looking forward to all the ships from here, but I also agree that the Maori are my favorite here because of the war focus, about the unique improvement. It's all coming together nicely. And I think that their unique ability will be about stealing technologies if you kill a superior unit. So
no.
So yeah, you get.
I think we found the person that we're going to hate instead of Kamehameha.
So yeah, it opens up the possibility of going through all the sailing staff, civil service, and all the upper half of the tech tree, and you disregard the military techs because you will eventually get to them by killing people.
Wow, that's awesome.
At least that was the unique ability that was always there. I don't think it was redesigned.
Are you allowed to drop any hints on what the actual improvement does? The path.
It certainly provides food. I think in one version it claimed neighboring tiles. And of course it provides defensive bonuses. Mm. It's like a cottage from Civ 4, but it doesn't grow.
Okay. Yeah, it just sounds like from the sound of things, Maori and his war focus is going to be like a Polynesian Montezuma, which is going to be very frightening. But at least one of them's wearing a shirt.
More Civs have shown us what art we're going to be able to get. At some point, looks fantastic. We can't have it just now, but it just, it's very tempting. It certainly just ups the desire to have them.
Oh yeah, teasing.
Hype.
Advanced user interface scenario. It's a pretty dividing thing. People either really, really like it or people just don't like it. I know a lot of people play with it and I know a lot of people that don't play with it. I fall into the camp where I don't necessarily play with it because I like a lot of the things it includes, but I'm not sure if there's actually an option to say, look, I want this sort of thing, but I don't want the other sort of things. But it makes things look a lot more intuitive.
I personally don't use the interface myself. I think it's very good. I think it does a lot of things and I can see it being very popular, but just from a personal point of view, it's just too much information for me.
Yeah, I find what the game includes itself is usually enough for me. I don't really need to go into the depths of it quite that much, as the user interface does. Yeah.
Then you look at someone like Marvazir, and he plays with the advanced user interface on, and he's very, very quick, very, very fast, and the amount of things that he can do with EUI is really, really nice. He can hover over things and just play at a much faster speed and get through things a lot quicker as if he didn't have it. So I just think there should be like a light option. If there is, definitely use it, because I do like mousing over things and seeing what things would be if they were improved and all that sort of stuff. But for me, I'm not necessarily the account that plays with it.
Yeah, so personally, I'm using the EUI and have been using for quite some time, mainly because of right-hand panel with all the leader icons and city-state icons, just because it's easier to click the leader icon and go to diplomacy screen and not look for their cities or click the diplomacy drop-down menu. So it hastens some things up.
I know, I can see that. It's actually funny because that's the thing that I like the least about it is the whole right-hand side of the screen. I like having the whole bar across the top of the screen. I know it opens it up a bit more. If you look at all the screenshots, they're really, really nice. But I think on the right-hand side of the screen, I think it just kind of messes things up with the whole sort of flow of the design of Civ anyway, inherently. So it's really interesting to hear another person's perspective on it.
It's my favorite thing there because I also appreciate all the art in Civ and seeing all those leader icons and having the opportunity to see them in their biggest form, let's say. It's always a good thing for me. But I've seen that in recent versions, the author included a left-hand bar with a unit list. I think this is a miss here.
Yeah, I've seen that. It's just very convoluted.
I think it can be disabled somewhere, but I'd have to dig this up. But what I also like about the mod is that you can mouse over the unique components in the Civ selection screen and it gives you all the information you would need about it before starting the game. So it fixes the flow, I think, from the base game that didn't give any kind of information before going into the game and reading Civilopedia.
A lot of the times people don't know the tech tree off by heart. Like I was playing for so long and forgot that chemistry and fertilizer improves your farms and mines and production. And in that respect, EUI is great, but I think sometimes it's just a bit overwhelming.
Yes, sometimes on these tooltips about the tile yields, I saw a small text telling, write a bug here, +1 gold. I think that I agree with you about the light version, or at least a version that is customizable in an easier way than meddling with all the things or personally manually. What Rob said about too much information. I don't need to know exactly all the resources they have, their gold per turn, and I can check this in the diplomacy screen and actually enjoy those diplomacy screens for personal preference.
With the religion, it tells you each of the different elements of the religious tenets. Personally, I don't think you need to know that every time you do a tooltip. Either you know that because you choose them all the time, or alternatively, you've got another way of checking it, i.e. through the religious menu. I must say, I'm not trying to knock the creators at all, because when somebody puts something like this together, I know it's very, very, very popular. I think it's just one of those things that personally I wouldn't use.
You notice when the top bar is removed and there's a massive gap in the middle, it really opens the game up. It really makes it look things like things are actually bigger than they actually are. Because I remember I used to make machinimas back in the day, and when you got rid of a lot of the UI, you realize how like big the actual game is, and a lot of the time the UI is quite constricting.
Yeah, that's interesting. I don't know whether or not it's an age thing with me. I don't necessarily need to find out things quickly and play at my own pace. There's a lot of people nowadays that seem to want all the information immediately. And people sometimes, I know for my own mod on Steam, ask me what certain buildings do. Well, it's all in the Civilopedia. It's just that they don't really want to go and check it. They'd sooner ask somebody on a forum what it does and wait for the answer. It's just ludicrous.
Yeah. I think it depends on how you play the game, really. Like, some people want to play it very quickly, but then there's people like me who basically do it as sort of a chill-out kind of thing and want to just relax and just not really go too intensely at it, I guess. Just go with the game as it goes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You're one of those people that play to win. When you play, you have to win, or you're just like, let's just develop my empire for the moment.
I don't know. Like, sometimes the going gets really bad, then I'm just like, take it where it goes. I used to be quite obsessed with winning the game every time, but then I found whenever I did that, it just got a bit boring, I guess. It's more interesting when there's a bit more challenge involved.
Yeah,
definitely. I'm still one of those people that actually rage quits out of games. Like, if somebody built a wonder that I really, really want, I'm like, no, god damn, this is too much. I have to go.
Yeah, I've been like that too.
Yeah, I do that.
It's just, it's so frustrating, especially when you're in the late game. There's 10 other civs and load times are really, really frustrating. And you spent 10 turns building this wonder and then all of a sudden it just goes somewhere else. You just flip the desk.
Usually when you've expended a great engineer on it, that's the worst.
Yeah.
Yeah. I can imagine the frustration of other civs. If there were people, they would just hate you.
Yeah. I mean, I do that, but I think it's a sign that not being the greatest player going, I tend to play the same or very similar game, no matter what civ I'm playing. So it's great with all these civs with these cool abilities and everything, but I probably don't
definitely
to the extent because I still play the same old way that I do with the Firaxis civs.
That's a really interesting point, because a lot of the times as a modder, when you're designing things, you have to look at how can I make use of mechanics that are underutilized.
Recorded for episode 48 with Gilded Duke, Anvil, Framed Architect, and Thalassicus.
A lot of the interface code is very difficult to work with. I actually wonder if they have like a tool they use to make the interface, because it's so much data that just is hard to work with. I can't imagine anyone doing it all by hand, setting up a box and where everything is on that box. I don't know.
Yeah, you talk about the XML layout stuff.
Yeah, the XML stuff especially.
Is there a visual editor for that, Mark?
Well, there are. I mean, I don't know that they're using one, but they're using their own markup. I don't believe that that's WW3 or anything client, though.
Yeah.
It's proper. They've got a lot of their own customized tags on there.
That is one thing I wish they had more for modders and also themselves, because it saved them time and energy, is standardization. Making the Great Works interface, just check the data, use that to figure out how to put it on the interface, because then if they want to change stuff, it wouldn't take them much effort either, and it would reduce chance of bugs and other issues and make it easier for modders.
Yeah, I remember writing a comment on something that maybe modders out there are aware of called the farm crash replacement bug.
I think they said that that's fixed now.
Right, but I just remember writing a comment, something along the lines of, well, they told a guy to go make the farm handler, and they sent him, and he lived in a closet for a year, and he came back with a farm handler, and they just integrated it. So sometimes that's what it seems like, is that there's just a ton of people working on this, and they don't always communicate, which is just like every other place that's a place of business.
That's always difficult when working on any collaborative project, is setting standards and figuring out a way to do things that will work well together. And it's also obvious in a lot of places in the code when you start looking at it that a lot of this comes from Civ 4 directly. So you had the programmers from Civ 4 and then the programmers from Civ 5, and they got their own styles.
Yeah, when I went to try and do a little bit of a style guide, I thought, well, I should start with what Firaxis is doing. I'll go look and see what they do. And then I think my next response to that in the thread was, well, I refuse to have random as my style, so we're going to have
that. It's like there's one block of code I found that had three different ways of naming variables.
Yeah.
In the same block. Well, that's like Framed was saying, that's pretty much the way it is with every business. It's always difficult to get all the different individuals on the team working together effectively. That's a challenge anyone faces, and I don't really begrudge them for that, because overall, this game is designed much, much more moddable and easy to modify than almost any other game I've ever played. And then you have like console games where modding is pretty much banned everywhere. So we're very, very lucky to have such a moddable and customizable game.
Yeah, it's a fantastic game. And I don't want to bash the developers too much because I'm hoping one of them will come on here someday. So.
Well, they do apparently listen, at least a little bit.
I'm sure our petty gripes do not move them.
No, but I don't think they would want to come into a hostile environment either.
Right. Definitely.
Which civs are too synergistic?
I would say the Mughal Empire is very, very synergistic, because if you don't build a lot of buildings, then the unique ability is pretty much nullified. So it's kind of not forcing you to build a lot of buildings. Nothing civ ever forces you to do something unless you're actually forced to do something. I think that it's actually a good question, what civs end up being too synergistic. I know that a lot of the complaints that we're revising Canada at the moment, and a lot of the complaints are that everything works too well together. I mean, there's lots and lots and lots of different functions, but at least every function has an equal and opposite function that synergizes well with it. So it's something that you definitely have to look at when you're designing civs, that things don't work too well together, because if they work too well together, then people are going to exploit it.
I think that one civ that can be an example of being too synergistic is JFD's Lithuania, that is centered all around not founding a religion, but there are benefits to it. So it means that you get more faith to spend in the industrial era for great people and so on. But I don't think it's bad that this civ forces a player into a certain play style. It reflects history in a manner. It's a fun civ that is centered around a gimmick and a certain limitation, but it gives its rewards.
It's kind of sad, though, because a religion, when you found one, you get a lot of points to your score. So Lithuania kind of misses out on that, I guess. But then I guess they can make up for it in other ways, that the ability gives them, for example, facility, I guess, conquest.
They get the Samogitian warrior unique unit that when trained in a city with only your pantheon, it gains the ability to convert defeated enemies to your side, so you can get for more conquests, etc. But I find Lithuania a good early production civ, because you can only build a shrine to get a pantheon and disregard religion completely, and you can focus on getting more wonders, more buildings, more units.
A few JFDs that center around conquering. There's Italy, there's Caesarea, and also the Franks. Armenia is around conquering as well. It's quite a few, actually. It's not a bad thing.
I don't know. I mean, in my early modding days, I found that I was worried about most of my civs being too centered around religion, actually. I think that's like my first three civ. The original Aboriginal civ I did was very religion-based. And then my original Lithuania was quite religious-based too, although it is now as well. But then my Latvia, which was nearly as good as the one I've done now, but it was very faith-based as well.
For Vietnam, I wanted people to go down the honor tree, and not many people use the honor tree, and I got a lot of flack for people making people actually go down the honor tree, because you get benefits for picking honor. And I'm like, well, how often do you pick honor anyway? Honor is really just an underutilized tree. People hardly ever pick it. It's not that honor is bad, it's just that tradition is really, really good.
It's good war policy.
Oh, yeah.
Hmm. But I think that tradition is just really, it's just so much better. It just dwarfs the other two policies. And I wanted people to go pick a different route that they wouldn't usually do. And that's what I like about mods, is that you get to utilize things that the Firaxis base civs don't really give you the option to do just normally.
Yeah.
It's certainly the right thing to do, I think, as a modder. Challenge a player and get them to play a different way. Otherwise, you're just sort of going through the motions, really, if you're playing civ and playing it the same way. Getting bored at possibly the same point.
Yeah, and here all those synergistic civs designed around a single idea, like Lithuania, like Armenia, come into play, that kind of force the player into a playstyle, but also break the habits.
A whole new world.
Yeah.
I like the civs that make you play the game a little bit differently. They're quite good in that way, because I often find, same as you guys, I get stuck in one particular mode, But then, like, I'd like to try and branch out, look at the ability of the sieve, and see where I can do things a little bit differently. It's quite fun.
Yeah, like, I found myself never, ever building a barracks until, like, late game or someone declares war on me. But then with Prussia, you're just like, build barracks and you get generals. And you're like, yeah, definitely. I love citadels.
I think sometimes I start off with the best of intentions of playing the game and wanting to use the sieve's ability, and then I'd sometimes slump back into my old style. So sometimes it works and sometimes it doesn't for me.
Yeah, I found out that I play the same style all over again when I'm playing to win. When I'm trying to roleplay the game a bit and slow down and change the attitude, I usually break the habit and go either super religious or I confine myself to a small portion of land or one city. So for me, it's all about roleplaying, that you have to tell yourself a story of the world you're in and not just beat the other algorithms that compete with you.
Recorded for episode 50 with Rob, R8XFT, and Alpha Shard.
The question is, if you're playing a total conversion mod where the creator has just created a brand new set of sieves, brand new world, etc., would you like the situation where the sieves are all balanced and equal to each other? So the experience of playing one sieve, it didn't matter which sieve you play, you would have an equal chance of winning. Or would you like to have some sieves which were a bit easier to play and some of the sieves which were a bit more difficult to play?
I think there's some pros and cons to both of those, but I've found that with Civ 5, most of the sieves are pretty equal to each other. Because like in Civ 4, with the attributes, I felt like I was using Dutch as a crutch or... Touch is a crutch. I mean, you know, the whole creative and financial attributes, I was using that like, oh, this is what I like. This is what I want to do. And I kept doing it each and every time. And now with Civ 5, all the sieves have such unique, interesting abilities and differences. I have no problem just jumping onto the next sieve that I haven't played. So I think I like balanced and equal.
Okay. I agree with you with the Dutch. I played them a bit in Civ 4. Then, and also Darius and Persia.
Okay.
Because it just sort of played to my style of gameplay.
Mm-hmm.
I get the idea of balance. It's a good thing. I think as a mod creator, I want to chuck in a couple of sieves that are more difficult to play.
Mm-hmm.
So that the more experienced player can say, I really want to have a real challenge here.
Right.
And I want to play a sieve that's going to be really difficult and maybe have a couple of sieves that were reasonably easy to play so that somebody might be overwrought with the mod, wants to maybe try it out with a sieve that's a bit easier. I guess a con to it though is if you were playing against that sieve, it would become a runaway sieve.
Mm-hmm.
So probably, and also likewise with the more difficult sieve, it might never get off the ground.
Right.
That's sort of a pro and con, isn't it? But it's interesting. Just to see what people think about that. So I don't know whether or not any of our listeners would like to put their thoughts into the thread.
I can understand the challenge of having some sieves be easier, but like for me, and I think maybe some other people, they tend to steer away from sieves that maybe give them too much stress and grief on trying to play them.
Calling today in North America, the number is 301-637-7659. That's 301-637-POLY. In Europe, 44121-288-7659. That's 44121-288-POLY.
The only thing worse than being talked about is not being talked about.
You can Skype us at the Polycast or email us at thepolycast@gmail.com. For more information on Modcast, our sibling shows Polycast, Revcast, Civcast and Turncast, or about Polycast in general, log on to the series' official website at thepolycast.net.
So in terms of other future projects, in terms of sieves that we know developers are making,
I think I'm looking forward mostly to some of JFD's sieves. I don't know if he mentioned some of them. I think he mentioned Denmark, Norway recently.
Oh, wow. Okay.
And I'm looking forward to it.
I think he did mention that. Yeah, I remember that.
No, he did. He did, I think. He also mentioned that he's doing a China split with a couple of the dynasties that involved.
He'll do some World War II ships. I think Japan first.
Yes, I'm looking forward to Japan, definitely.
I've just changed Luigi's title for his Israel Civ to Israel, Philistines, and Biblical Civilization. So maybe
yeah, it's just not his death.
So, I'm just looking forward to seeing if he's got some other biblical civs up his sleeves. Sounds like he has, because that's what he's asked the title to be for the thread. So we'll have to watch the space, I think.
I'm definitely looking forward to a bunch of Luigi civs as well, especially around North America. He's been working his way up slowly through North America, and he's about to get there soon enough. And I'm looking forward to a lot of them, the Navajo and the Shawnee, the Cherokee, the Mississippians, hopefully, if he does that.
He seems to be one of those modders that can just do about everything, every facet of the mod itself. It can do the lure programming, it can do some fantastic art for it, it comes up with some great ideas, just like a complete modder in itself.
Secret Tech's really good like that as well.
Yeah, absolutely, yeah.
He's definitely coming soon.
Something else I'm looking forward to as well is also JFD's doing an Irish Civ 2 with Brian Borrow as the leader. Really looking forward to that.
So is there anything else for us to discuss then?
I think we went over everything pretty well.
Yeah, guys, thanks for joining us on the 51st episode of Modcast. It's been hilariously fun. Yeah, it's been great. I don't know what I'm saying. I might just butt out of this. Right. Okay, you can stop listening. Bye.
Bye, guys.
Bye.
Cheerio.
See ya.
Until next time. I think you can do without city-states and just redesign the whole city-state concept, because for a lot of the time, city-states are pretty arbitrary and they're just there for the sake of being there. And...
but they're so much more reasonable than the Civs.
That'd be interesting if the game started off without any city-states, but some city-states were created in the sense...
kind of like a Planetfall mechanic in Beyond Earth. That'd be kind of cool. I'd like that. Just city-states spawning out of nowhere.
Like the barbarian cities in Civ 4 that appeared and formed mini empires. It was fun to compete with them.
Yeah.
I think we should get onto that. Disregard that. I read it wrong. Dan, edit that out. If you don't edit that out, I will shoot you. I will find you and I will kill you.
He'll probably keep it for blackmail purposes.
Yeah, he's going to spite me and just leave this in. That'll teach you should not respond to my Skype messages.
Let's say synergistic or synergic. I don't know how to call it.
Synergistic.
Synergistic, okay.
That's the official pronunciation.
Okay.
That's good. So,
fantastic.
Recorder.
Right, so.
Excellent.
Shall we do sort of a signing off kind of thing?
Yeah, sure.
Yeah.
Do you want to do that, Sir Jack?
Yeah, okay, what am I doing?
Record date, August the 9th, 2014. Civilization 4 and 5 sound clips, copyright Take-Two Interactive. Copyright Civilized Communication at civcom.net.
Press stop now.